Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
There's another kind of rush that I've felt, you know, since I decided that I wanted to be a writer. I think it's one of the reasons why I decided to be a writer. And it's that rush you feel before you even put your ideas on a page, you know, when that big idea comes to you and you can pretty much feel the book that you're going to write or the story you're going to write.
Welcome to Radio Ambulante Unscripted, a new way to listen to Latin America, part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Today we're talking with Dominican writer and musician Rita Indiana. That song you're hearing in the background is called El Blue del Ping Pong, and it's from her last musical project, an electro merengue band called Rita Indiana y Los Misterios. Rita is an extraordinary talent and a bona fide star, but here's the thing. She actually quit music not too long ago. She quit to write novels and stories. Amazing novels and stories, I might add. So if we've lost her music, then at least we've gained an important and unique voice for contemporary literature. But when we sat down to talk, I wanted to ask her first about her musical projects, beginning with a relationship to the sounds she heard as a kid growing up in the Dominican Republic.
From when I was 11 till I was 14, I was a headbanger. And when I listened a lot to Megadeth and Slayer and Metallica and stuff like that, and I had, you know, a little gang of friends, and I used to listen to merengue in my house in the a radio, and I had some tapes, and I would listen to them secretly, like when my friends came over, my headbanger friends, I would turn it down. You know, it was really crazy because I couldn't let them know that I enjoyed this music. This was just a couple of years, because after that I became a little bit of a club kid and I kind of danced. You know, what they played in the clubs was mainly house music and merengue and salsa. So I came out as a merenguera when I was 14 or so.
And at what point did you start making your own music?
It was really late, because I always just wanted to be a writer. I think I never took lessons of any kind. You know, I don't know how to play any instrument, and I think with the coming of these technologies that allow you to make music even if you don't know how to play an instrument, you know, like when I first got in touch with Reason, for example, 10 years ago, and stuff like that, all these programs, like I suddenly understood that I could, that I had it in me, and that I could arrange stuff, that I had an ear for it. And that I had an ear for these rhythms that came from my country, that I could reproduce them. In it was sort of like writing also, because I did it in my computer, just like writing. So it happened when I was 27. That's when I started making little beats and making stuff, and then formed the project that was called Miti Miti, which was like an electro merengue project. And then came Los Misterios.
That's so interesting. It's like, you know, it's very much of the moment, you know, to create music based on technology, or to even have access to the possibility of creating music based on technology. It's so, you know, when we think of Caribbean music, or we think of Dominican music, you think of something much more analog and old school. And yet this is entirely, you know, as authentic an expression of Caribbean music as there can be in some ways, because the Caribbean too has been sort of awash with waves of technology and waves of culture and waves of this kind of change, you know. It strikes me that way anyway.
Yeah, it's the thing with Los Misterios, for example, was that all that music, most of it was first, it was, you know, pretty much electronic and samples that I did in my computer. And then when I went to Santo Domingo, I got together with a band, with an actual band, you know, with drums and a Dominican tambora and the guira and all that, and I made them play what I had in my computer. So It was an interesting marriage between analog and digital. So I think that's why it's so unique.
Let me ask you something. Because of the kind of deliberate, eclectic approach to music, was it hard for you to find collaborators?
Not at all. I have, you know, the cool thing about the band, the Misterios, was that they all had, I've always been friends with musicians, because writers are the most boring people in the world. So I always hung out with painters and you know, artists and musicians, and all the people from the Misterios, they all came from different different genres. One was came from like punk rock. The other came from like roots music. This other guy came from electronic dance music. So it was a nice mixture of people and y géneros musicales. But it wasn't hard. I had friends from before, so it was just, you know, calling up the friends and they showed up.
I'm still trying to process that last statement. As a novelist, I'm trying to wonder how boring I might be to read.
I have writer friends, but they're special.
Well,
I know you know what I'm talking about.
It's so funny. You know, one of the things that strikes me is that you know, making music, especially making music with a band, is so collaborative, and writing is so personal and private. You know, both have their pleasures, obviously, but writing, being totally in charge of everything, is an incredible feeling of power and autonomy. You know, has it been hard to go back and forth between these two kinds of expression, and how do you deal with the issue of autonomy versus collaboration?
Well, that's one of the main reasons why I left music. Why I left popular mm-hmm. music, or the way I was doing it, because I really don't like depending on so many other people. You know, I wouldn't want to be like a film director or anything like that. You know, because I like to work on my own, and that's how the music I made was born that way. You know, it was born in my computer, me in a little room in New York or in San Juan, and that's. It comes because I was a writer. That's what I, when I was 14 years old, I said, you know, what do you want to be? I want to be a writer. That's what I want to be. The music thing was more of an accident. And so I'm pretty comfortable and happy that I made that decision to, you know, to quit music. And I'm really happy and I'm very productive and enjoying it very much. Enjoying that power that you just mentioned very much.
It wasn't a hard decision to leave music. I mean, I imagine it's been hard on your fans. Probably, but personally?
It was hard. It was hard because no one believed me. My friends, my partner, my family, nobody. They thought I was crazy. They thought I was doing it. I don't know. They couldn't understand it. They were like, Rita, but you're doing so good. People like your stuff. You know, they like your music. Why are you doing this? You can make money. And the thing is, nobody knows. You know, you got to love fame to be able to keep doing that, you know, to have that kind of attention. Like, I couldn't go to the movies with my kids. I couldn't go to a concert. I couldn't ride the public transportation in Santo Domingo because it was so crazy. People were always, you know, recognizing me and asking for a picture. And I don't like that. You know, I think it has to do with the fact that I am more than anything a writer, and I want to look at others. I don't want others to be looking at me. You know, I want to be like, we have a word in Spanish called come boca. You know, when you're listening to other people's conversations on the train, or and I want to be able to do that. I didn't want to lose that. And when I saw how things got in Santo Domingo, I said, you know, this is not for me. I don't want to do this. I'll produce music. I'm gonna make music. You know, other kinds of stuff, maybe more experimental, not with my voice and my face in front of it. But I definitely don't want to be have that kind of fame.
Yeah. One of the things that I would imagine was or could be intoxicating is the adrenaline and the power of a live performance. And there's really no analog to that in the writing world. Do you miss that, or is that something that you just made your peace with? That's not your path?
Yeah, I think I made my peace with that. There's another kind of rush that I felt, you know, since I decided that I wanted to be a writer. I think it's one of the reasons why I decided to be a writer. And it's that rush you feel before you even put your ideas on a page, you know, when that big idea comes to you and you can pretty much feel the book that you're going to write or the story you're going to write.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like a constellation of things that are not put together, but you can feel that. And, you know, that I didn't have with music because it was very immediate. I made a song in 5 minutes, you know, whatever, bye-bye. And that is the thing that literature gives me that nothing can give me. And, you know, that's one point, well, a lot of points towards it.
You know, one of the things that I noticed that's kind of an overlap between your music and your writing is, is this in terms of the lyrics, you know, and then the way you write your prose, is a fascination with the colloquial, with Spanish, the way it's spoken, you know, the sonority of it, you know, that you hear in your prose and in your novels and your stories, is there, and also the playfulness in the language with your lyrics. Talk to me about that, about the difference between approaching writing lyrics and writing prose, and if there were lessons for both, you know?
Papi was an experiment in that, like in writing a book in Dominicano. I will go back to that at some point, and even maybe in a more radical way. I'm now trying to... I just finished a novel, science fiction novel that has... it's a more literary in a way, but the some of the characters, when you hear them speaking, well, they speak like someone from, you know, El Cibao from the Dominican Republic would speak, or if it's someone from La Capital, well, they speak like from La Capital. You know, it's something that I think every writer does, you know, the characters speak like people should. And it's something I think it's just, it gives it texture, you know, it gives the text something alive, you know. I really enjoy that. I enjoy listening to people, how they, it is musical, you know, we speak in tones. It's something that's, we there's no way we can do, even German people do it, you know. So I think it has to be part of what I do as a writer, because I'm in a way, you know, recreating these situations and emotions, and you know, the voice is such a, it shows so much of the psychology of people, and you know, how they feel, or their fears and everything. Is so, there's so much of what people are in how they speak and how they construct a sentence, you know, that I think it's really important.
Yeah. So talk to me about your early influences in terms of writing, not music. Just the first book, and I think a lot of writers have this, that first book that just kicked you in the ass and was like, oh shit, I got to do something. You know, I got to try this. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, definitely. I was a big fan of Mark Twain when I was growing up. I actually learned how to read English reading these books that a brother of my grandmother gave me. And I think I still have that obsession with the young, you know, that he had. Tom Sawyer was like, I read it over 10 times when I was like 9, and Huckleberry Finn, and El Príncipe y el Mendigo, The Prince and the Pauper, I think is the title in English. And I still have that obsession with youth and young cultures and the, how do you say, the marginal youth, you know, that he had. And I think those books definitely were very influential for me and for what I'm still doing.
I guess that's a surprising answer to me. I mean, now that you mention it, yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, the Mark Twain and your use of this of the young first person, you know, in your work. But it's a completely surprising answer to me. I kind of feel like an idiot for not, for not noticing it, but. Was it mostly American fiction, or was it just Mark Twain was the guy?
I think he was the guy. I used to read with my mom. I mean, she didn't read to me like to make me go to sleep, but we would read like also Oscar Wilde and Mark Twain like at night. Like I would read a chapter, then she would read me a chapter, then I would read a chapter, and so Oscar Wilde is another. Another big influence. I'm talking like really early, you know, like you asked early and I'm giving you the earliest. Another thing is my mother's brother is a psychiatrist, and he gave me a book of Greek mythology when I was starting to read like 6. And that was like my favorite book in the world. I was like a Greek mythology fan alongside those other things. One book that was really important to me, I read it when I was about 11 or 10, is Richard Wright's Black Boy. And so, definitely, you know, I think American fiction definitely made a mark on me.
And in terms of Caribbean or Latin American writers?
That came after, like when I was in a teenager, that's when I started reading, like, compulsively, and I started reading Alejo Carpentier and García Márquez, Cortázar, you know, the boom, basically. And that's when I started reading like crazy, and reading, that's when I read a lot of Latin American fiction. But that came after, and I could see traces of the stuff I mentioned before in those writers, so it wasn't
interesting. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Talk to me about science fiction and the draw of science fiction as an artist.
I saw an article like, I don't know, like a month ago, you know, Mundo Pasoldán, he's a friend, and he just published a science fiction novel. I didn't know he was gonna publish one, and I was finishing mine, and he said something that really I found very smart. That was, he said that science fiction is going to be the new realism. And in the case of the Third World, I think it does make sense, you know, because we live in such like extreme contradictions in our countries, you know, where there's like, you know, you see in Santo Domingo, there's like, you know, the edge technology, and there's still people living in barracks, you know, that it's like, it drives you insane, you know, that these things can live together. And I'm a very big fan of Lovecraft and Philip K. Dick, and I finished a trilogy of The Crazy Girls, as I call it, with Nombres y Animales, which are three novels written in first person, and they're all, there's always a girl that tells a story. So this new novel that I just finished is different, and there's, I think it's more grown up, and it's not a coming of age novel anymore. And it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of, it shows some of the like crude contradictions that we have in our society in the Caribbean, and through a lens of you know, a dystopian lens of paranoia and violence. And I think that's what fear, you know, fear, we live in fear. In these countries, we live in fear. We live in fear that, you know, we're not going to be able to buy food. We're not going to be able to pay our rent. We're not going to be able to, these are countries where people are, you know, living in fear pretty much all the time. And fear is the food of monsters, you know, of the mind. So I think in a way it's a great scenario for science fiction and for horror and for all kinds of genre literature, you know. So I think it's just, I found the proper time to just put all those things so together in a book.
Can you tell me more about it? In specifics?
I can tell you three things. It's a book. It's a science fiction novel. It's a book about bucaneros. Bucaneros were these guys that lived in the pirate times. They would sell, you know, the cowhide and other things and food and stuff to the pirates that stopped by on the north coast of the Dominican Republic. And it's also a novel about contemporary art. That's as much as I can tell you. If you want to know how the three are connected, you know, you have to wait for the book.
I have nothing to say about that because I have no idea how to connect them. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the utility of sci-fi in political and social commentary. That by stepping off into the world of speculative fiction, it allows you to make you know, political statements that might otherwise be hard to make, you know, in a poetic way. Have you found that to be the case?
Yeah, I think that there's just some things that, for example, I don't like when I cross between, you know, like music and literature and stuff like that. I just do it because it's like a tool, you know, that works better for me to transmit an idea. I think also with the genres, you know, I think just some ideas that you want to put down, you need, I needed a science fiction scenario to communicate it. I think there are some things that are just so far out, how they work and how they continue to live in our world, that the only way possible to explain them is through science fiction, through but to make them understandable, or to make them maybe fun to read, or you know, to make a matter for work. It has to be through, you know, so putting the story in 2040 or in the year 3000. So I think it's, you know, the genres are tools that you use because that's the dress that fits the idea that you want to express.
Rita Indiana is a Dominican writer and musician. Her new novel, A Work of Science Fiction, will be published next year by Periférica. This interview was produced by Silvia Viñas with engineering help from Claire Mullen. Special thanks to Laura Ignacio and production intern Diana Buendía. The Radio Ambulante team includes Martina Castro, Camila Segura, Luis Treyes, and David Pastor. Carolina Guerrero is our executive director. Radio Ambulante Unscripted is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. And you know, before I go, I want to let listeners of this podcast know about a really special event we're doing in San Francisco on November 2nd. It's a live show at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, a really special evening of multimedia storytelling. It's called Outsiders. Everything will be translated, so you don't need to speak a word of Spanish to enjoy the performance, or a word of English for that matter. It's going to be great. For more info, go to our website, radioambulante.org. Radio Ambulante tells the stories of Latin America. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks
from PRI.